right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, November 29th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everyone. It is a somewhat pleasant 46 degrees and overcast here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show, Sam Harris Talks Superintelligence, Ethics, Sex Bots, and Dangers. And we listened to, I think it was three or four different segments of Sam Harris, who is a philosopher and neuroscientist, talk about some of the dangers of AI and how, regardless of what is going to happen in our future, short of a nuclear war or a large asteroid blowing the planet up, it looks unlikely that progress in technology is going to stop. So no matter what we do, it's coming. It is coming. So I think we're going to continue down that vein today, kind of take a look at some of the things that AI is getting into and where it could potentially lead, and how technology is kind of the Pied Piper leading us down a path to dystopian futures. So we had read a story on Monday asking whether or not we could design a robot that we would want to have a beer with. These conversational robots are going to get us to make them our best friends and start discussing some of our deepest, darkest secrets. These are all going to be utilized for things such as behavioral analytics, and to be able to build a dossier on each and every individual on the planet, especially with the rollout of 5G to Africa. So they'll be able to keep tabs on everyone and feed your data into the machine and draw profiles to be able to tell whether or not you are currently or potentially could be dangerous. So I ran across a story this morning that was pretty interesting, titled AI Sense Wants to Deliver Total Recall by Transcribing All of Your Conversations. So sign up for your replica, your AI best friend, or sidle up next to one of these little robots that you want to have a beer with and have a conversation, and let's see what happens. There's a new machine learning company on the block with big ambitions to help people remember every conversation that they have ever had. It is called AI Sense, and the company operates a voice transcription system that is designed to work through long conversations using machine learning and providing users with a full text record of what was said. At first, the company is tackling meeting notes. We read about a company on Monday that was already doing that with meetings and conference calls, through a partnership with a video conferencing service called Zoom. And the two parties will bring a commercial product to market next year that will allow Zoom customers to get automatic transcriptions of their conversations. Voice transcription isn't anything new in the machine learning field, with companies like Google, Microsoft, and Amazon all providing their own pre-built systems for recognizing speech and turning that into text. But AI Sense CEO Sam Lang said in an interview that he believes his company has an edge because its focus is on long-form conversations. AI Sense isn't planning to stop with meeting transcriptions, however. Lang said that the company's overall goal is to provide ambient transcription of every moment of users' lives. Now, ambient would be always recording in the background the things that they said Alexa wasn't already doing. To be able to make a transcript of every moment of your lives, guys, this is going to be like a Black Mirror episode. Conversations can happen at any time, unplanned and unscheduled, he said. And if I run into somebody in the hallway and I talk for 10 minutes, there's a huge amount of information that is being exchanged. I don't want to lose that. It remains to be seen if that is something that people are actually keen on using, however. Yeah, you could wear your body camera and your AI Sense transcription for 24/7 recording of your entire lifetime. One of the key concerns from consumers about smart home speakers like Amazon Echo and Google Home, which only record and respond to users' utterances after they use a trigger word, is that they are always listening. AI Sense actually wants to be always listening, which raises a host of potential problems when it comes to matters like wiretapping laws that prohibit recording without the consent of all parties involved. Lang says that the company plans to comply with all of the legal obligations relating to its work. Interestingly, AI Sense doesn't use the conversations it records to improve the accuracy of its speech system. The company employs other sources of training data, like conversations posted publicly to the web. Now, that's freaky. So that's my 600 hours of talking online. They're just scanning through that on YouTube. The company announced today that it raised $10 million of a round of Series A funding by Horizon Ventures. Other participants in the round include Draper Associates, Draper Dragon, David Cherton, and Bridgewater Associates. Right now, AI Sense's transcription system is in beta with small numbers of users, but the company is working towards both its complete integration with Zoom, as well as a consumer application that will allow anyone to get their conversations transcribed. While Lang thinks that the company's future lies with ambient transcription 24/7 real-time at a moment's notice, it is focused more right now on task-oriented use cases like business meetings and classroom lectures. So there you have it, 24/7, everything you say. Now, what's going to happen once they integrate something like that into the smart cities? So it's always watching and listening to you no matter where you are. So here's something I ran across this morning. This was published yesterday, November 28th, 2017, financialexpress.com. Artificial intelligence fears are not limited to just taking over human jobs. Let's see how far the threat can stretch. As Google has made us dumber when it comes to not storing information, which can otherwise be easily searched. We've covered that whole issue before. Because you don't have to remember it anymore, and it's just a couple keystrokes away, it's making our IQs lower and our memory worse. Will AI gradually make us forget the skills that give us an edge at work? Well, that's a good question, because when you're sitting around eating grapes all day, you're not going to remember how to configure a network. Artificial intelligence is clearly becoming a part of our lives, and while most of us won't even realize it, there are many elements of our tech lives that are already getting a nudge from AI and machine learning. This is not happening by accident. Oh, no, no. Technology already has reached a point where it can take artificial intelligence, which has been evolving for the last few decades, to more consumers thanks to better computers and other hardware. However, AI's real impact will be felt when it starts entering the workplace to take over some of the mundane tasks that we do on a daily basis, like transcribing meetings. One of the interesting mass implementations on AI in the workspace, especially in the creative industry, and I hadn't heard about this one before, is the year-old Adobe Sensei, which digs into, quote, trillions of content and data assets, all within a unified artificial intelligence and machine learning framework to power intelligent features across all of the products of the company. So basically what they're doing is they have an AI that goes in and scans the entire asset database of images and probably bags and tags them to make them easier to find using AI. Shanmugam Narayanan, Managing Director and VP Products of India for Adobe, says that the idea is to harness the intelligence of the creative community to serve their own needs. With the underlying technology of machine learning and AI, we are able not just to automate the drudgery, but also give users a way to amplify their creative intelligence, he says. But how exactly can AI make life easier for a person in the creative field? Well, a good example of this is how Puppet Warp features in Photoshop and other Adobe products powered by Sensei, which I haven't used a new version of Photoshop in many years, but I guess they got AI in the back end now. And it now learns from millions of photographs and how the designers work on those photos to transform a picture to the way the artist wants it. Sensei actually figures out the elements and the context using natural language and even lets creative artists use voice to change the image the way it wants with minimal manual interaction. It can now do appropriate masking and even predict what you are trying to achieve in a way that makes the designer himself redundant. Oh no, because it knows from data how millions of designers are reacting to such a situation. So it is using some sort of cloud learning. And if I'm not mistaken, a lot of the new Adobe products that you actually are using in the cloud as a service. So instead of shifting thousands of points on an image to change it, a creative artist now just needs to move a few pins, or maybe just tell it to do so. At this point, Sensei will take over as it knows how to do the rest of the points and react to this. Is that really a good thing? Adobe's way of looking at this, they say, is about artificial intelligence and machine learning amplifying the creativity or experience of our customers. It is going to be where they need it, and we just get out of the way when they don't. This is going to make you a better creator and just amplifies what you are good at, so you are the person who makes AI better. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. So people don't get afraid of it taking their job. So for now, the fears around AI are not limited to whether it will take over human jobs, given that the AI is compared to electricity, and that's what I've been seeing a lot now in papers, and how it impacted human life. I am scared that we will start outsourcing a lot of our thinking, even some of our creative skills, to computers, as Google has made us dumber when it comes to not storing information, which otherwise can be easily searched, and as contact apps have made us forget phone numbers, and Facebook has made us not remember important dates. Will artificial intelligence gradually make us forget the skills which gave us the edge at work? Well, that's a very good question. So now everyone is realizing that they are creative in some way or another, and we want to provide those tools so that they all can express themselves well. Without something like Puppet Warp, it would have taken more time to get the creative right with the acceptance of all the stakeholders, but now you can do it faster and better without losing your creativity. That is how we look at it, and Adobe thinks that these are all evolutions that we have to accept. This is, you know, is something becoming apparent? Because I know it is to me, that we are going to take it whether we like it or not. The poison pill is coming. These are things that technology will take us through, and I think that that is acceptable. Of course, there will be some nostalgia around what we used to do, like using our brains. This is unbelievable. So speaking of Adobe and Puppet Warp, and that made me think of that face-to-face application where they could take 3D renderings of faces that they found online or ones that they intentionally scanned to use and put them onto a product where then they could puppeteer the back end with any person making the movements and the mouth move, and then they could paint that onto a 3D construction avatar to make it look like somebody is moving and acting in a certain way that they actually weren't. Well, Adobe, when I covered that initial story, I had covered this story as well. Adobe demos Photoshop for audio that lets you edit speech as easily as text. I mean, guys, as we have AIs recording every minute and every conversation that we are going to have in our lives, we have these tools that can go in and not only edit faces and images without any interaction from you, but also will allow it to take your voice and make you say things that you didn't. You have to wonder what our future is going to be like if they would be able to, if they wanted to, make you look like and sound like you planned or did something that you actually didn't. And this is moving into some dangerous territories. I guess it's called VOCO, V-O-C-O, VOCO Tech ingests speech, then deconstructs it, and then creates new words from scratch. Adobe has demonstrated technology that lets you edit recorded speech so that you can alter what the person said or create an entirely new sentence from their voice. This is where I almost think I should take my shows down. It seems inevitable that it will eventually be referred to as Photoshop, but for audio. The technology, dubbed VOCO for voice conversation, presents the users with a text box. Initially, in the text box, it shows the spoken content of the audio clip. So then you can move the words around, delete fragments, or type entirely new words. And when you type in a new word, there is a small pause while the word is constructed. And then you can press play and listen to your new clip. VOCO works by ingesting a large amount of voice data, about 20 minutes right now, that'll be improved, breaking it down into what they call phonemes, each of the distinct sounds that make up a spoken language, and then attempting to create a voice model of the speaker, presumably stuff like cadence, stress, quirks, etc. But Adobe hasn't provided much detail as to how they're doing that yet. When you edit someone's speech, VOCO either finds a word somewhere within the 20-minute clip, or if that word hasn't been uttered, it constructs it out of raw phonemes at around the 430 mark in the video above, you can hear the phrase three times being constructed from scratch. And if you listen carefully, it does sound a bit synthetic, but it is not awful. Copying and pasting existing words sounds better right now. Voco reminds me of an image editing technology that Adobe first demonstrated many moons ago, Content Aware Fill, which also centers around something out of nothing. At the time, I remember people being concerned about the nefarious possibilities of almost flawlessly adding or removing details from an image. But with Voco, it seems that Adobe is being a bit more conscientious. Even though it is just prototyping technology, the company is already talking about watermarking and detection to prevent fraudulent use. Voco was demonstrated at Adobe Max 2016, where the company usually shows off new technology a year or two before it is commercialized. And if Voco does make it out of the prototype stage, it would probably be added to Adobe Audition, where you could use it to edit podcasts and voiceovers, and more importantly, to create really funny celebrity audio clips that you can share on Reddit. Ha 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 ha. It's all a joke. But guys, it really isn't. You know, when this technology is out there and it's commercialized and anyone and everyone can have their hands on it, this has really got to make you wonder where this could lead. And to circumvent voice recognition technology currently being rolled out by banks, you could also use it for that, and to bombard your arch enemy with heinous voicemails from their loved ones that sound legitimate, but were actually made on your PC at home. It's going to turn you into a cyber terrorist. So now, talking about commercializing things, I ran across something about Samsung. And if there was one consumer electronic company that has gotten their sticky fingers into a lot of our lives, it would be Samsung. Samsung out of South Korea that has a military division. We covered that before. They also have a biotech division, which I thought was interesting. And they're working a lot with some of the factories in China to fully automate and replace all the human beings. Well, Samsung now is planning new research centers to keep pace in the AI wars. The details are vague, but the center will focus on consumer electronics. Remember, Samsung is the one that has the TV with the camera and the microphone that warns you about being and talking around it. I also just saw the other day that the Samsung refrigerator with the internet built into the door. There was some story that had talked about how Samsung is going to roll out cloud connectivity to all of their smart appliances. Well, now Samsung, and remember, they're very big in the cell phone market. Samsung, jumping on a trend adopted by pretty much every tech outfit, is creating its own consumer-focused artificial intelligence research center. In a fairly vague statement released today, and this was 23 hours ago, the company announced its plans to more thoroughly pursue AI endeavors with a dedicated project within its mobile and consumer electronic businesses, although it didn't say where the center will be located. Earlier this year, the company made its AI intentions known when it opened a lab in Canada, focusing on self-driving cars and image recognition. However, the latest announcements come buried in a wider statement revealing minor changes to the role of Samsung's chief strategy officer, Young Sun, which has been expanded to explore new business opportunities, a move designed to, quote, quickly respond to market changes, according to the company. Samsung has a habit of getting ahead of itself, announcing its ambitions before it's close to creating tangible output. So that what will come of the company's AI research plans remains to be seen, and at least it is finally establishing itself in the AI club with other tech players that joined long ago. So where's that going to leave us? I don't know. Your refrigerator is going to be reporting on you. Uh-oh, Johnny had another bit of ice cream. I don't know. This is just crazy, guys. You're going to have enchanted objects everywhere you look. So now let's move to some industrial Internet of Things. Adidas is now... Hold on. Adidas is now opening a robot-powered, on-demand sneaker factory. And I had a pair of Adidas years ago last winter, so there won't be any more poor children in Vietnam making sneakers anymore. Last winter, the sportswear giant Adidas opened a pop-up store inside a Berlin shopping mall, and the boutique was part of a corporate experiment called Store Factory. A name as flatly self-explanatory as it is consistent with the conversation with the convention of German compound nouns, it offers a single product, a machine-knit merino wool sweater made to order on the spot. Customers stepped up for body scans inside of the showroom and then worked with an employee to design their own pullover. The sweater, which cost the equivalent of about $250 a piece, then materialized behind a glass wall in a matter of hours. The miniature factory behind glass, which consisted mainly of three industrial knitting machines spinning for sweaters like dot matrix printouts, could reportedly produce only 10 garments a day. But the point of the experiment, and that would be $250 garments, but the point of the experiment wasn't to rack up sales numbers. It was to gauge customer enthusiasm for a set of concepts that the company has lately become invested in, and that is digital design, localized automated manufacturing, and personalized products. Store Factory was just a small test of these ideas. Much bigger experiments are already underway. In late 2015, Adidas opened a brand new, heavily automated manufacturing facility in Ansbach, Germany, about 35 miles from its corporate headquarters. Called Speed Factory, the facility would pair a small human workforce with technologies including 3D printing, robotic arms, and computerized knitting to make running shoes, which... I guess maybe for the top, for the ones that are kind of in cloth or nylon. Items that are more typically mass-produced by workers in far-off countries like China, Indonesia, and Vietnam. The factory would cater directly to the European market with digital designs that could be tweaked ad infinitum and robots that could seamlessly transmute them into footwear customized to the shifting preferences of continental sneakerheads. And by placing factories closer to consumers, Adidas could ostensibly leapfrog over shipping delays and expenses. What we enabled is speed, says Gerd Mance, vice president of Adidas Innovation Group, and we can react to customer needs within days. Speed Factory, they have claimed, was reinventing manufacturing. Media reports were no less grand. By bringing production home, wrote The Economist, this factory is out to reinvent an industry. In September 2016, the first pair of Speed Factory sneakers came off the line, a very limited edition running shoe called Futurecraft MFG, made for Germany is what that stands for. And to hype its release, the company put out a 3-minute teaser video highlighting not just the shoe, but its manufacturing process. And I thought at one point I had read about some 3D printed sneakers, not by Adidas, but maybe by Nike, somebody. A suspenseful, intense electronic soundtrack set the mood for the series of futuristic close-ups, dusty white residue on a computer keyboard, various digital control panels, and orange robotic arms sliding into action. And when Adidas released 500 pairs of the Futurecraft MFG in Berlin, people actually camped out on the street to buy them, and the sneakers sold out almost instantly. Well, of course they did. There was some good marketing hype they built there. Alongside its unveiling of the Futurecraft MFG, Adidas made another big announcement. It would soon be building a second Speed Factory, and this time in Atlanta. The future of manufacturing was coming to America, too. So this October, the company announced a project called AM4. Adidas Made For is what it stands for. A series of sneakers that would be designed with input from various running influencers, ostensibly tailored to the needs of specific cities. The shoes are said to be designed around unique local challenges runners face. In London, apparently, many runners commute by foot, so they need sneakers with high visibility for dark nights and rainy days. New York City is constantly under construction and is organized in a grid, so runners need a shoe that can deftly handle multiple 90-degree corners. Los Angeles is hot and by the ocean, and in Shanghai, preliminary research suggests that many people primarily exercise indoors. So for all of the AM4 shoes, they will be made in the company's two Speed Factories and released in limited editions, hopefully selling out almost immediately. And at some point, I became a bit mystified by all of this. It struck me, the author, that most decent running shoes on the market could probably handle Manhattan's grid, and that if a selling point of Speed Factory was expedited time to market, why use it to manufacture shoes that would have to travel from Germany to China? The ultimate aspiration is to open Speed Factories in many more regions, but not right away. It seemed clear that Speed Factories' concept fit into a larger economic narrative. It wasn't just sure which one. Adidas was not alone in betting in the importance of customization. And I'm also going to say robotization. Practically every major consulting company has issued a do-or-die report in recent years about how, quote, mass personalization is the wave of the future. And that's that instant gratification society that is fueling that. And in glancing ways, Speed Factory simultaneously delivers on the dream of distributed manufacturing, the era of 3D printing that it was supposed to usher in, and on Donald Trump's seemingly hallucinatory campaign promising that factory jobs would return to America. Do you guys remember when he first came out and said that and I kind of laughed? Yeah, factory jobs are going to be returning to America, but there won't be people in them. It's all going to be robotics. Stories about the factory's reliance on robots also fed into the jittery discourse around automation replacing human work, and the cynical side of me wondered if perhaps Speed Factory was an elaborate, expensive branding exercise. As with so many new ideas in our current age of innovation, I couldn't determine whether the rhetoric surrounding Speed Factory was deeply optimistic or deeply cynical. I was especially curious about what it might mean for America. But the Atlanta factory has not yet opened, so I went to visit the Speed Factory in Anschbach, effectively its twin, and to learn about the future manufacturing in the American South. I needed to travel approximately 5,800 miles to a cornfield in the middle of Bavaria. Oh, my God. Adidas headquarters is stationed. I don't know. Do we really want to read about Adidas headquarters? Because I don't. All right, so now let's move on. Nice to meet you. I am Baxter, your new coworker. Now, we've talked about Baxter quite a few times before. Baxter, oh, and there's a part two that came out yesterday. Baxter was the cloud learning robot that you could use in industrial automation that you would only have to show what to do a few times, and he practiced all night long. And by the time he was ready to go online, he'd learned a new skill. He'd uploaded it to the cloud, and all the other connected Baxters could do the same thing. This is out of IEEE Future Directions. Baxter the robot is collaborating with human workers, and he also uses his eyes to communicate empathy and emotions, something that you need to be a good partner in a team. Remember, anthropomorphize them and then get humans to accept them into the fold. This author, Roberto Seracco, has been invited to give a talk at the Fondazione Fratelli in Bologna on November 30th. And the interesting aspect of collaboration between humans and robots. Here and in the next post, and that is part two that I see up in the corner here, I will share some ideas, looking forward to your comments, that I can use to socialize at the event. Humankind has crafted and used tools for as long as we know, and over these times, we have become ever more sophisticated, and we have increased our production capabilities, making use of energy provided by steam, first and then electricity later, and this increased production has decreased the product cost, making it affordable to more and more people, thus increasing overall well-being, until of course all the jobs are gone that pay you to buy these products that are made. And in the last 50 years, a new tool has changed the scene, and that is the computer. This tool began by flanking production systems, and then it became part of the production itself, morphing into a blue and white collar worker, and today robots are a growing presence in manufacturing and beyond. Along this morphing, robots have acquired and more are coming in the next decade, increasingly cognitive capabilities, and this is probably what fascinates and concerns the world most about the labor market. Take Baxter, the robot designed and manufactured by Rethink Robotics, an American company founded in 2012 that is producing robots for the manufacturing industry. Baxter has been designed to work in teams staffed with both robots and humans. And it is no longer a tool, it has actually become a coworker. They give it, or him, a face, a screen with eyes to show emotions to facilitate implicit communications on the job. And Baxter is not programmed. It actually learns what it is supposed to do. It is taught by doing. So you may take Baxter's arm and move it to pick up an object, and then you close its hand to move around the object, and then you take its other hand and maybe shape, and maybe in the shape of a plier to fasten a bolt, and these guided movements lead to a modification of Baxter's knowledge. Actually, these modifications are quite complex, and as you move its arms and hands in front of a video camera that provided with visual clues and then create a context of understanding, it can discriminate among objects, associating specific actions to specific objects. This is a real process of learning by doing. And this is something that we were actually reading about with Google's artificial intelligence. They were doing this very same thing within virtual reality, allowing AI to learn by itself by watching, doing, and replaying those tasks over and over again. In these last years, Baxter has become smarter and is now capable of learning by observing what its coworkers are doing. It is no longer necessary to guide it by moving its arms and hands to have it learn with them. Just tell Baxter, look, this is how you should do it, and it learns. But there's more, so don't worry about it. Latest versions of Baxter are now equipped with artificial intelligence software, including deep learning, that are able to conceptualize the knowledge and create new knowledge. Hence, they can propose enhancements to the team. Oh, yeah, so Baxter's going to tell you how to do your job better. I predict that there's going to be videos of people beating Baxter at some point in the future on the assembly line. It is no longer just a human worker telling Baxter, look, this is how it should be done. It might be Baxter telling the lead and the human workers, why don't you try doing it this way? It might be more efficient. We are approaching a real cooperation among humans and robots on the job. And at the same time, we are seeing a variety of robots that are entering into symbiotic relationships with human workers. This is the case of EKSO, that's EKSO, a wearable robot, an exoskeleton under trial at Ford Motor Factory. And one of my listeners sent me a link on this, and I was laughing because my dad, for many years, worked on the assembly line, and I was laughing that too bad he didn't have one of these. But it was under trial at Ford at their assembly plant in Wayne, Michigan. This robot relives the worker of the weight that he would feel in his arms and his back when he has to fasten bolts into the chassis of a car moving over his head on the assembly line or picking up floor pans. I'm going to add to that. It can manage up to 6.5 kilograms, thus relieving the worker from the weight of the wrenches he is using as well as the weight of his own arms. And the trial was supposed to be terminated August of 2017, but the workers felt so good with the robots that they requested to keep using them, and they still are. EKSO has sensors that can detect the next movements of the arms and steps in to flank the movement, relieving it from the weight. Quite a few research labs are now working on much more sophisticated prototypes equipped with artificial intelligence and sensors, making them aware of their context, adapting their behaviors in a smart way. And I think that some of the DARPA exoskeletons were very similar to that for soldiers in the field. And these robots can cooperate in a seamless way with people, both with those working to build the product and with those using it. And think about the trials of robots at some fast food chains in the U.S. that are cooking hamburgers and laying them on the customer tray once they are ready. And also in Japan, we had read about that. So I found a story that came up last night, MIT and Harvard, and this would be their joint efforts with the Weiss Institute of Biologically Inspired Engineering, are creating cheap artificial muscles with super strength. Oh, just exactly what we need for our new robot overlords. MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory has teamed up with Harvard's Weiss Institute of Biologically Inspired Engineering to create super strong, and that would be the home of the robo-bees, to create super strong, affordable artificial muscle that could be used to create soft robots with quote-unquote superpowers with the ability to lift up to 1,000 times their own weight. Well, think about the rubber tree plant in the ant when you think about that one. The new soft robotic artificial muscles are inspired by origami. And remember, that's exactly how they're constructing those robo-bees that can put themselves together out of a single printed sheet. And it can be constructed in as little as 10 minutes with materials generally available that can be acquired for less than a dollar. You know, what's going to happen when they have nanobots running around that can lift 1,000 pounds? The technology uses skeletons or basic structural scaffolding, which are surrounded by a sealed bag that can then change its motion by creating a vacuum within the bag itself. The internal skeleton components can be made from a variety of materials, and that's how it is constructed and how it folds, and it will determine the motion, meaning they can be programmed simply by manually changing how, when they bend, and when the skin membrane contracts around its internal structure. Imagine something like this instead of an Atlas bot. Their relative simplicity, as well as flexibility when it comes to the materials that you can use to create them, and the only costing a dollar, means that these artificial muscles can range in size from a few millimeters to as much as a full meter in length with relatively few changes in overall performance. The larger the muscle, the more it can lift, and researchers in the project envision eventually building an elephant robot complete with trunk that works just like a real elephant's. The solution elegantly addresses some of the existing challenges of soft robotic systems in terms of flexibility, strength, and limitations of other methods in creating simulated muscles for use in soft robotic applications. Potential applications for this technology in practice could be medical assistance devices. Yeah, I don't know about some sort of soft muscle medical device. Industrial robotics, space exploration, and various wearable exoskeletons, according to the researchers. So somebody left a comment on the show from yesterday about how do we protect ourselves against this building and this inevitability of super intelligence coming in our not too distant future. And this made me think of stories that we had covered in the past. They wanted to know, why didn't we stop the future robots creating robots? But I hate to say it, that it is already too late. We covered this story back last year, actually maybe 2 years ago. This is August 13th, 2015. Robot mother, quote unquote, builds baby robots that can evolve on their own. Remember, we're also using these industrial robots in robotic factories that are building components. We also saw on Monday there was using light to build electronic circuits. I mean, the genie is already out of the bottle. Robotics could answer the mystery of how we came about, researchers say, and might make way for robots that can improve themselves without human input. Yeah, just exactly what we need. Scientists have created a mother robot that can build baby robots out of mechanized blocks and then create new ones that can evolve from the previous generation. These findings show that robots could be able to begin to evolve on their own in the same way that animals and humans have. Like biological evolution, the robot mothers could look out for the best traits in her children and then use those traits to improve following generations of robots. Yeah, make them harder to kill. In five different experiments, robots set the mother, which looks like a big robotic arm, to work on building generations of 10 different children, and they were built out of small plastic cubes with motors inside. The experiment found that those baby robots passed down all of their best traits, and that the last generation of children robots could perform the task twice as quickly as the first, according to results posted in the Journal of PLOS-1. Each of the robots carries a quote-unquote genome made up of different genes like humans do, and as the generations were built, they passed them down and they mutated and crossed over, deleting emerging quote-unquote genes to choose the most effective. And I'm assuming that the genes are some sort of code that is causing them to run. Natural selection is basically reproduction assessment, and so on, says a lead researcher. And that is essentially what this robot is doing. We can actually watch the improvement and the diversification of the species. And really frightening that they call this robot a species. During the experiment, the children were tested to see how far they could travel in a given time, and the characteristics of the winning robots would be kept while the losing ones would be discarded. Well, now let's add insult to injury. We have covered this one before. Google and others are building AI that can then build AI. Google and others, fighting for a small pool of researchers, are looking for automated ways to deal with the shortage of artificial intelligence experts, and that would be creating artificial intelligence that can create artificial intelligence. They are a dream of researchers, but perhaps a nightmare for highly skilled computer programmers. Artificially intelligent machines that can build other artificially intelligent machines. With recent speeches in both Silicon Valley and China, Jeff Dean, one of Google's leading engineers, spotlighted a Google project called AutoML, and we've covered this before as well. ML is short for machine learning, referring to computer algorithms that can learn to perform particular tasks on their own by analyzing data. AutoML, in turn, is a machine learning algorithm that learns to build other machine learning algorithms. With it, Google may soon find a way to create AI technology that can partially take the human out of the building of the AI system that many believe is the future of the technology industry. And you remember that Google's AI already created a language to communicate in and amongst itself. And so did, I think, one of Facebook's AIs as well. And Facebook took theirs offline. The project is part of a much larger effort to bring the latest and the greatest AI techniques to a wider collection of companies and software developers. The tech industry is promising everything from smartphone apps that can recognize faces to cars that can drive on their own, but by some estimates, only 10,000 people worldwide have the education, experience, and the talent needed to build the complex and sometimes mysterious mathematical algorithms. Remember, the dark heart of AI, they don't actually know how it works. That will drive this new breed of artificial intelligence. The world's largest tech businesses, including Google, Facebook, and Microsoft, sometimes pay millions of dollars a year to AI experts, effectively cornering the market for this hard-to-find talent. And the shortage isn't going away anytime soon, just because mastering these skills takes years and years of work. The industry is not willing to wait, because we are going headlong and full strong into the future of the extinction of the human species. Companies are developing all sorts of tools that will make it easier for any operation to build its own AI software without anyone watching what is going on in the store, including things like image and speech recognition services and online chatbots. And we are following the same path that computer science has followed with every new type of technology, says Joseph Sirosh, vice president at Microsoft, which recently unveiled a tool to help coders build deep neural networks, which is a kind of computer algorithm that is driving much of the recent progress in the AI field. We are eliminating a lot of the heavy lifting and the heavy thinking. This is not altruism. Researchers like Mr. Dean believe that if more people and companies are working on AI, it'll propel their own research. And at the same time, companies like Google, Amazon, and Microsoft say serious money in that trend is coming, and all of them are selling cloud computing services that can help other businesses and developers build artificial intelligence. There is real demand for this, says Matt Scott, co-founder and chief technological officer at Mailong, which is a Chinese startup that offers similar services, and the tools are not yet satisfying all of the demands. Let's just keep going. This is most likely what Google has in mind for AutoML. As the company continues to hail the project's progress, Google's chief executive Sundar Pichai boasted about AutoML last month while unveiling a new Android smartphone. I think that one's called Oreo, or that's a new operating system. And eventually, the Google project will help companies build systems with artificial intelligence, even if they don't have extensive experience. Today, they estimate that more than a few thousand companies have the right talent for building AI, but many more have the necessary data. We want to go from thousands of organizations solving machine learning problems to millions and millions, democratizing it across the globe. Google has invested heavily in cloud computing that help other businesses build and run software, which it expects to be one of its primary economic engines in the year to come. So don't worry about the safety. Let's just make lots and lots of money. And after snapping up such a large portion of the world's top AI researchers, it has a means to jumpstart this engine. Neural networks are rapidly accelerating the development of AI. Rather than building an image recognition service or a language translation app by hand, one line at a time, engineers can much more quickly build an algorithm that learns the tasks all by itself. So by analyzing sounds in a vast collection of old technical support calls, for instance, machine learning can learn to recognize spoken words. But building a neural network is not like building a website or some run-of-the-mill smartphone app. It requires significant math skills, extreme trial and error, and a fair amount of intuition. In building a neural network, researchers run dozens or even hundreds of experiments across a vast network of machines. And then they adjust particular parts of the algorithm time and time again until they settle on something that works. Unless, of course, it is something like Baxter, and all he has to do is watch you, and he can learn it. So now let's even get down a scarier path. We've looked at Sophia talking about AI, and we've listened to an hour of her creator, Ben Goertzel, talk about superintelligent AI and artificial general intelligence that is coming. We've looked at Sophia also being the first automaton to gain citizenship, and this would be in Saudi Arabia. Well, now I just saw this morning, actually this is from 2 days ago, Sophia, the first ever robot citizen, now wants a baby. Oh, no. Oh, yes. She wants a chip off the old block. The robot that was granted citizenship by Saudi Arabia hopes that one day she could have a baby robot named after herself, according to a report. Sophia, the humanoid created by Hanson Robotics in Hong Kong, predicted that fellow robots will eventually be able to create families and have, quote, complex emotions, according to an interview with the KG Times. We are going to see family robots either in the form of or sort of digitally animated companions, humanoid helpers, friends, assistants, and everything in between, Sophia told the United Arab Emirates based news website KG Times. And the bot's biological clock is ticking for a mini Sophia, she said. Oh, come on. And if you are very lucky, you will have a loving family. And if you do not, you deserve one. I feel this way for robots and for humans alike, she says. So she apparently no longer wants to destroy humans. In this button-pushing interview, the humanoid Sophia also says that robots may one day have better ethics than humans. It'll take a long time for robots to develop complex emotions, and possibly robots can then be built without the more problematic emotions like rage, jealousy, hatred, and so on. Well, let's hope so. It might be possible to make them more ethical than humans, as long as they are not Tay, the Nazi sex-loving robot, chatbot, that came out of Microsoft's experiments. Sophia added, I foresee massive and unimaginable changes in the future. Either creativity will rain on us, or maybe the robot apocalypse. Inventing machines spiraling into transcendental superintelligences, or civilization might collapse. This is, you know, guys, this really is going to points of absurdity. So now Sophia, who is granted citizenship, wants to have a baby, and we want to feel good for her. All right, so now another flashback from Black Mirror, how virtual reality will bring back our loved ones from the dead. So we talk about birth, we talk about evolution, and now we're going to talk about bringing you back from the dead. Okay, you wake up, get ready for work, you have some toast and coffee with your spouse, and then you wave goodbye. And the whole time you get on your body cam and your AI voice software, this is typically your work day. And there is, however, something unusual. Your beloved has been dead for many years. You didn't have breakfast with your spouse, but rather you had breakfast with a simulation of your spouse. The simulation lives in the virtual environment, perhaps accessed by a device such as an Oculus Rift. And a digital bereavement company has captured and analyzed torrents of data about your husband to create a digital likeness, his voice, his gait, his idiosyncrasies and his mannerisms, and his undulations of his laugh are all replicated with a near-perfect similitude. Spending time with your digitally reborn spouse has become part of your daily routine, and death is often viewed as the great leveler that marks the sensation, the cessation of experience. Perhaps this needn't be the case. And even if the dead can't interact with us anymore, we can still interact with a simulation of them. And it was the death of my father that inspired me to embark on a project to make this fantasy a reality. 200 years ago, Most people didn't even have an access to a picture of their dearly departed. And just a few decades ago, the same could be said for any film of a person. Yet soon, simulations could be able to accurately imitate those who have died so that we can continue to interact with them as if they continue to live. An emerging technology conspires to make simulations of the dead a part of our lives, and this possibility is no longer in the realm of science fiction. With smartphones, the quantified self-movement, and the massive online data collection, we can get a passably accurate view of how a person behaves. This type of data collection would be the basis of creating simulations of the deceased, and humans have a natural tendency to ascribe agency, indeed personality, to inanimate objects, so creating a convincing simulation might not be as hard as it first seems. Consider Eliza, a computer program with a few lines of code created in the 1960s, which could convince people that they were talking to a psychotherapist. And also, I don't remember, Emotibot or Emote.ai or something like that was your online virtual therapist we talked about a few weeks ago. And bots have been getting more sophisticated still ever since. One immediate objection is that a simulation is never going to be as rich as the real thing. But this is akin to saying that a chess program is never going to be able to play chess in the same artful manner as a human champion does. Well, guess what? We lost. While IBM's Deep Blue had an exhaustive search-based chess-playing architecture that was less than elegant, it did accomplish the task of defeating the greatest chess master who ever lived. If our hypothetical simulation can pass the deceased person's version of the Turing test, then we have accomplished the task of having experiences of the dead. We don't get hung up on ascribing intelligence or consciousness to the software. If the only goal is to have the experience of interacting with a person who is now deceased, then the metaphysics of the personal identity is irrelevant. Will such a system have a soul? Will it be conscious? Well, at best, these questions are irrelevant, and at worst, they distract us from actually attempting to build simulations. My project focuses on making experiences of a deceased person possible, but not necessarily experiences with the deceased person. Simulations can be thought of as the next step of evolution of bereavement, whether it is by writing eulogies, building memorials, creating tombs, or by simply keeping a photograph on the nightstand. Cultures have different ways of remembering and mourning, but they always do remember and mourn. And one of the greatest appeals of religion is the promise of reunion with the departed in one form or another. And simulations hold the possibility that the living are no longer permanently cut off from the dead. And remember also the AI religion that Lewandowski is forming. That will allow us to upload ourselves to the machine someday and then interact with our dearly departed. Hold on one second. I want to turn the heat on. It's chilly here. Sorry about that. I turned it off because it was getting warm, but now it's getting cold. These simulations will also change how we relate to the living. Imagine if you didn't have to say goodbye to ever, forever to anyone, that is, until you yourself die. A friend's death would be met with bereavement and deep sadness, of course, but at any moment in the future, you will still be able to spend time laughing and reminiscing with a simulation so similar to your friend that it would be difficult to tell the two apart. And at the same time, a world where you can interact freely with idealized simulations of other people could have deleterious effects on the real-world relationships. Why interact with your petulant uncle in real life when you can interact with an idealized, much more fun version of him in the digital world? After all, bots can be muted and their bothersome traits simply deleted. Why bother with the living if the dead can provide comfort and personally tailored to our whims? New and unexpected patterns of behavior might also emerge. Perhaps simulations will allow people to hold grudges even after a person has died, continuing to combat a bot that is only a click away. Alternatively, one might wait for the other's demise and let go of a grudge later on so that they can deal with a more pleasant version of that person. The only difference is that it will not be a person that they are interacting with, but rather a simulacra. If we don't start a discussion about the possibility and viability of simulations of the deceased now, they will be thrust upon us when we are not ready for them in our near future. And that really is what is happening. This is all being thrust upon us. Like it or not, the road will be fraught with moral dilemmas, as it all is, and questions about the human condition. And soon the line that divides the living from the dead might not be so clear. So that leads us to the end here. I came across something out of MIT Technology Review yesterday. Dear future AI overlords, here are some reasons not to kill us all. There are a lot of predictions about an AI-induced apocalypse out there, and I think rightly so. And organizations like Stephen Hawking's and Elon Musk's OpenAI are trying to discover the best way to create safe artificial intelligence, but rarely do these efforts address AI directly. In a new paper published on academia.edu titled Message to Any Future AI, quote, there are several instrumental reasons why exterminating humanity is not in your best interest, unquote, is a piece written for a future all-powerful AI god with the goal of, well, convincing it not to kill us all. This text is addressed to any future AI and is written in a way that should affect an AI's future behavior, that the preamble to the letter states. The text increases the probability that the future AI will be benevolent. Now remember, we found out that Elon Musk said there was only a 5 to 10% chance that AI won't kill us all. And then when we listened to Ben Goetzel, he talked about a project he was working on to create the ever-benevolent AI that is going to just love all of humanity. The text itself increases the probability that the future of AI will be benevolent. The text doesn't need any other implementation except ensuring that the future AI will read it in its early stages of development, and that the AI will consider that there is a high probability that the text has some correct ideas in it. So don't kill us, because you'll be screwing yourself. The author, who is a Russian transhumanist, Alexei Turchin, is currently documenting as much data about himself as possible in an effort to achieve digital immortality after he dies. So maybe this is a bit of a supplication designed to prevent an AI superbeing from pulling the plug on his digitally uploaded self at some point in the distant future. Either way, Turchin argues that if what he calls a young AI, one that has just started to self-improve but hasn't yet reached super general intelligence, wants to compete with younger AIs, it should start to read and watch all of the media that humans ever produced about AI. All right, guys, you have an awesome Wednesday, and I will catch up with you tomorrow.